toss in the dark, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes.
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where we firmly believe that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks deserve the Pulitzer Prize in drama for their one-night-only live theatrical event, All In. I'm one half of your intrepid host, Andrew Terrence Caberline. With me, as always, is the mouth of the South, Tyler Ward. You'll hear from him in just a minute. So, we recently sat down and recorded an episode all about in-ring wedding segments through wrestling history, and we were going to just spend a little bit of time on All In, but we ended up really digging in and going a full hour on it. So, we're breaking it up into two episodes for you. Check back on Monday morning when, not if, when you want to listen to the wedding episode, which is a real hoot. Now, let's get to our breakdown of All In, already in progress. But we have some pressing, like, current wrestling news to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the fallout of All In. See what I did there? Where it was All Out and All... That wasn't as good as I anticipated. So All In did happen. We're a week out of it. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest live wrestling non-WWE event in America in decades.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of qualifiers. But believe us when we tell you, that show was very important. So we're going to take a few minutes to just kind of review what made the show noteworthy and ask ourselves some questions about its lasting significance and the potential for more shows like this. So first off, the bat, Tyler, the hard question, what were your yes. first impressions after watching the show?
Both Andrew and I think we watched All In fairly recently. We didn't get to see it during... it was actual live, that being, of course, I was at a wedding.
I was at a wedding as well.
So. While it was happening, yes, I was at a wedding. But no, it was great. So going back and watching it, I had, of course, the finishes had already been spoiled for me, but that's okay. I mean, knowing the outcomes of the matches doesn't necessarily take away from the enjoyment of it sometimes for me. And specifically for an event like this, where it was more about, I think, witnessing the matches and getting like a feel for the audience and just like the aura around the event, I think was far more bigger than who won or who lost. But I really enjoyed it. The main card, it flew by for me. I watched it on Saturday. I was just sitting at home, didn't have anything to do, threw it on, and I knew going in, I was like, oh, this is a 4 or 5 hour pay-per-view, shoo, I'm gonna be watching this till dinner time almost. But it just, it flew by, and before I knew it was over. But I enjoyed every minute of it. It was a great card. What did you think about it?
I agree with you about how it flew by. I know it flew by for Matt and Nick Jackson, who have come out since and said that they kind of had some trouble timing the show, because when it ended, it like trailed off.
That main event definitely flew by.
But I also felt that it was like it felt very quick, which is a positive, because this show, if you also include the WGN hour-long kickoff event, this comes in at about 5.5 hours, which is just as long as all of the really long WWE pay-per-views minus WrestleMania. But those can really feel like a slog, and this never really drags for me. And I think that sometimes the reason for that might be that the WWE programming really gets held down by a lot of like different things they have to plug and a lot of commercials and like who's in the audience and we got to do this thing and that thing. And there was some of that at All In, but not nearly as much. I mean,
they did it in fun ways. Like I really enjoyed the sponsoring of Cracker Barrel and how that made its way into like the Hangman Page Janela match, like
absolutely the
actual Cracker Barrel. Like I feel like if WWE did fun ways of showing their advertisers like that, it would be like akin to how they do the the different kernels for the KFC sponsors.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I really enjoy that. And I think I'd love it if they did that more with their other sponsors rather than just, you know, spitting out this clearly mm-hmm. typed up paragraph of like, oh, and thank you to our sponsors, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, I guess you're right. The last time that WWE had fun with that was Dolph Ziggler beating up The Miz as a giant chicken for the KFC commercials.
I was always a big fan of when they had a great commercial where they had like a bunch of wrestlers dressed up as the Colonel. It might have been like Sheamus and Big Show, and I think Becky Lynch was in there. That was really great. But my all-time favorite was HBKFC when Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels came out as it. That was super entertaining.
Yeah, that was really great. I heard from an interview with Joey Janela after the event that the only reason that his match was a street fight is because they knew they were going to have a Cracker Barrel there. And they're like, well, we have to incorporate it into the show somehow.
So that's the only reason. That,
you raise a great point, though, that this show was fun. That's yeah. really the buzzword for it. And it wasn't so nonsensical, except for one particular segment, yes. I would argue, that you felt like insulted. No, it wasn't that. It was fun in a smart way, and mm-hmm. it did a lot of callbacks and references to wrestling history. I think that was for how modern this event is, as like a event without one particular promotion. It's a like it's self-funded, crowdfunded. You know, there was a podcast convention the day before, mm-hmm. and it feels very modern, but it was making a lot of reference to wrestling's iconic past.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made this show work for me, actually.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it on that same point, it's and not to say that WWE does this all the time, but it feels like when you're watching WWE television, they almost try to dumb down the product in terms of the viewers, because I think they have to appeal to the more casual viewer, the person who, you know, mm-hmm. watches Raw or SmackDown occasionally or something like that. But this was a hardcore wrestling show dedicated to hardcore wrestling fans, and they didn't pull their punches on any of the content in terms of the wrestling or the storylines. They knew that everyone watching knew the storylines going in.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to hold your hand and walk you through it. They could make little hints and callbacks to the storyline that everyone in that arena got because they paid attention to the product and they care about it. So it had a different feel than like a WWE show in terms of that, for me, is what it felt. It felt like a very smart show, I guess, is what we were getting at earlier.
It was smart. I'm curious what non-smart fans or newer fans or people who just were unfamiliar with a lot of these wrestlers, what they felt watching it. I'm not sure, actually. I want to know because, you know, I did go back and also watch that WGN hour special before,
mm-hmm.
Which wasn't on New Japan World, unfortunately, but I found it on Daily Motion. but I watched that whole special and I found myself saying, like, well, this actually feels like it would work really well for someone who had no idea what was going on. And mm-hmm. I wonder if they did that intentionally. I don't know if you got to see this too, the pre-show over the budget battle royal.
So I haven't watched it yet, and I was really upset when I didn't realize that the pre-show wasn't going to be on New Japan World. So when I started it up and the first match was who was the first match? I think it was Fallen Angel.
It was Matt Cross. And MJF.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so when I realized the Battle Royal wasn't on it, I was like, oh no, because I've heard such great things about it, but no, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen a Battle Royal that I liked or that felt important in a long time, and this one was super fun. And everyone got their spots in, and they told a good story. And the commentary did a good job of being like, here are these crazy cast of characters. Doesn't it make you want to order the pay-per-view? And I wonder if it really worked.
That's what I've heard the most audience. From people is that they were like, this is the best battle royal I've ever seen. They were like, it didn't feel like a battle royal and like wasn't paced like one, but Yeah, so I really need to check it out. I'll probably have to Daily Motion that as well.
You got to check it. I'll tell everyone to check it out because it also introduced me to three wrestlers who I've never seen before, who by the end I was very interested in. And we watch a lot of wrestling.
We do, yes.
So like, it's hard to really give something new to the two of us. Mm-hmm. And I saw Billy Gunn's son, Austin Gunn, in that Battle Royal, and he was great. I saw a wrestler named Marco Stunt. Have you ever seen a Marco Stunt match?
I have not.
Have you heard of this person?
I think I've heard of his name, but only because of All In.
Yeah, he's like 4'8", maybe.
Oh my God.
And has like a fun size gimmick, and he can go really great. I can't wait for the eventual like feud between him and Cheeseburger. Nice. And then Jordynne Grace was also the only female. She was fantastic.
Yeah, I've heard she really stood out in that Battle Royal.
WWE needs to hire her immediately. She's super, I think she is like very green, but she has an amazing look and is this like little bulldog. And I don't want to go into it more because not what this podcast is about. But like the Battle Royal was well worth the price of admission. And you got that for free on WGN.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a question for you about how to talk about this show with people. And if you say like, oh, I watched this pay-per-view, this wrestling pay-per-view, and someone you're talking to is like, oh, like WWE, and you're like, no, it wasn't WWE, and they say, well, who was it? How do you answer that? What promotion was this?
See, that's the million-dollar question here, because I mean, good Lord, they had wrestlers from every indie promotion under the sun. They've had they had titles from every promotion under the sun. So I mean, if someone asked me straight up, they're like, what promotion put on All In? I would say Bullet Club.
Yeah. Because they had the
giant banner on the Titantron on the ramp. So I was like, well, it's a Bullet Club show. I mean, I don't know what else to call it, but,
the Bullet Club gets compared a lot to the NWO from WCW in the 90s. WCW did a NWO, air quotes, promoted show. Was that Sin?
Was that Sin or Sold Out? That was Sold Out.
They're both very bad pay-per-views.
The difference is Sold Out sucked.
Yeah. This show was very good.
Yes.
And like even in the most negative light, like the show was very enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So why it worked here when it didn't work then, I think is because of this idea of collaboration, which afterwards Kenny Omega said that's the future of non-WWE wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even just very recently, TNA was trying to go up head-to-head against WWE. And I mean, you just can't now because you don't have, you're never gonna have the budget and the deals that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to go head-to-head. Ring of Honor was simultaneously trying to be the third place thing, and they notoriously decided not to work together, and suddenly all the talent had to pick one or the other. Now that has been reversed. There were a lot of Impact wrestlers on this show, and I am finding it hard to explain just how crazy that is. 'Cause this is like something that we would book in like a video game. It's not something that should be happening for real.
Yeah, definitely. I think because this was like the conglomeration of every big indie, almost every big indie company there is. Like there was Impact wrestlers, there was Ring of Honor wrestlers, there's New Japan wrestlers. CMLL. Like it's weird. Lucha Underground wrestlers. Like it's weird how, and because WWE has become so big that it has given all the indie companies a reason to collaborate with each other, and that I think they all know, or at least they have to know, that none of them can compete with WWE at this point. WWE is it's a beast unto itself, and so I think they realize that there's in a weird way it's like strength in numbers. Like alone, they can't compete. But if you put all you put three of the arguably the other three biggest wrestling promotions in the world together, you might have a chance.
And it's this weird thing of like wrestling history repeating itself, where the WWE became what it was because it went and bought up all the territories before they could realize they should bound together.
Yeah.
And now it seems like all the territories are saying, hey, we should be a thing together. And WWE is probably going to respond the way they did back in the day by trying to buy up as much of the talent as possible. Another small note about this, of why this was so different than just like 8 years ago, is that for the short time that shows like Ring of Honor and TNA were sharing talent, they weren't acknowledging storylines. So there was the really frustrating thing that was going on. I don't know if you remember this, but I certainly do, of the biggest feud at the time in Ring of Honor was CM Punk versus Raven. And simultaneously in TNA, they were a tag team.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, I don't remember that at all.
I think part of why All In is a success is because it didn't, you know, it didn't try to pretend like these two realities were
separate.
Different.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This felt like an Avengers movie. It felt like all the people from all the different franchises that you like are coming together.
That's actually that's the perfect analogy for it. Yeah, this was wrestling Avengers. Like,
don't tell Stephen Amell that though, because DC would get mad if that's we'll get to Stephen Amell in a second.
Yeah.
So beyond the actual like wrestling in the ring, what else about this show felt different from a WWE show? Because I think something we were both interested in is how the TV presentation would look and sound and feel.
So in ways, there was a lot of similarities between this show and a WWE pay-per-view. You could tell already the budget itself was clearly more reflective of that. They had an amazing stage set up, a huge Titantron. They brought back Pyro, which... it seems like one of those things that like you don't really realize it's gone until you see it again. Like when they removed Pyro from WWE, at no point was I like, "Ah, oh, where's the Pyro?" But after seeing it All In again, I was like, "Oh yeah, that's what I missed that." But
I think the moment I realized that Pyro was gone in WWE was when they brought Kane back and he like did the thing in the ring where he put his arms down and then no fire came.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh.
That's awkward.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's literally the moment I realized that Pyro was gone.
If you only pay for one set of Pyro, that has to be it. Like, that's his whole gimmick. How could you not?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. But, so, I mean, there was a few similarities. It did feel different, though. It felt a lot more like a New Japan pay-per-view in terms of the wrestling, of course, and really the way that the in-ring action is shot. You really have to watch a lot of wrestling, I feel like, both WWE and New Japan, to really see the difference in the way that the in-ring action is shot between the two. But after a while, you can start to pick up like the little things about it. But I think definitely the biggest thing that I noticed was the card, just the order of the matches.
Yeah, it was bizarre. I will say really quickly before we jump into this point, because I think we're going to spend some time on it, is something that our newer viewers who did watch All In may have realized, like subconsciously, the biggest like single visual difference is that they shot from the other... from like not hard camera, from like
camera. Reverse
it's just like flipped. It's flipped reversed, which is, I don't know if that was just from a logistics standpoint why they went that, or if that they're like, hey, it will make you realize that it's different.
Well, it's also interesting because that's the same way they shoot NXT.
Yeah, and I think trying to be more like NXT is not a bad
no,
look.
No, not at all, not a bad thing. So the card felt very different. And this, I think, attributes most to the fact of us saying that this 4.5 hour show just flew by, is the order of the matches really was conducive in that it kept building the action. You know what I mean? For a WWE show, granted, there's nothing necessarily wrong with the way they plan it out. They do it specifically for reasons, of course. But like it reaches points where you know there are filler matches and there are bathroom break matches that are like, all right, we just had a huge big match that the whole crowd was into. This next one's going to be kind of a go to the bathroom match or hit the merch stand match, and then we'll have another big one. Where this one, All In's card just kept building and building, big match, and then a bigger match, and then a bigger match, and then a big, like, there was just the anticipation kept going up. There were no lulls in it.
And I think that the WWE model, which really is like the everybody model in the terms of how cards are put together, I don't think there's been a whole lot of deviation from it in wrestling history, but you start with a really big match to open up the night.
Yeah.
And you end with your biggest match. And then everything in the middle, like there might be a big match right in the middle of the card, but then you put that filler on either end so that the audience doesn't get burnt out. And we've seen that as shows get longer and longer with WrestleMania, you hit a certain point where no matter how big the match that's about to happen is, people just don't have the energy anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that they being the Bucks and Cody and the other people who are producing this show, made a really bold choice by following kind of like the Aristotelian model of like drama, like dramatic structure, which all of you listeners out there who are in 10th grade English, you're about to get this, of like starting with rising action, hitting a climax, and then having falling action. Because the what I thought was going to be the main event, and I imagine you thought was going to be the main event too, was Cody versus Nick Aldis for the NWA title. And that was right in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
The Matt Cross match against MJF is a match that, before looking at it, I would say, well, that probably will be a bathroom break match. And they started off with that. They rose the action with that. So then by the time that you got to the final three matches, which were after both of the title matches, they were able to be more like fun exhibition matches where you didn't have to, they had stories, but they weren't as high stakes as the other stories. So it was like a nice gradual descent out of the card while still having fun. That's how I felt, at least. By the time I got to the main event, I was like, I'm just going to watch them do cool moves. I don't have to to be
and lucky
invested otherwise.
Because of time constraints, that's exactly what we got.
I think that they've probably, okay, so the show definitely, a lot of the matches went over the time they were supposed to, so the main event was rushed. The main event came in,
I heard, they cut it, it came in at about 12 minutes, I think.
Yeah. 11 minutes 48 seconds,
and they cut it down from about a half hour, they said.
And that, you know, you can hear some people at ringside telling Matt, like, hey, you've got 30 seconds
before
you're off the air, because they don't own the network.
Yeah.
So when they're off, they're off.
This is an interesting thing, because this is watching that main event after already knowing about this, knowing that they had to rush it and they were rushed. So while I was watching, I was like, I knew they were rushed. I knew what had happened. And so it was very interesting then, because the finish, like right before the Bucks hit the Meltzer driver, you can really see the feeling in the ring of them rushing around, like, all right, come on, we got to go. We got to go. You come here, come here. But it was great.
A minute. A minute before that, when everyone's on the outside and Rey Mysterio is the only person on the inside, you can see him in Spanish just yelling to Bandido and to Phoenix to be like, hey, get back in the ring.
There was also...
We can't milk this.
That was the least selling I think I had ever seen in a match, where Bandido He got, everyone was on the outside and Bandito was on the top rope and he did like this cool like 720 spin plancha onto them.
Yeah.
And normally a move like that, people are down for 20, 30 seconds, slowly getting to their feet. He like spins off, lands on him, and literally everyone falls down and stands right back up.
Like, yep. I found that very fun. And actually, like, I know that there was a technical purpose for that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they just didn't have the time, but it felt very on brand with who the Bucks are and their detractors like, well, they don't sell. And they're like, well, if you don't think that we sell before this, after this match, you're really going to think that we don't sell.
Yeah.
So we should talk about the non-main event, main event.
Yes.
The match that this pay-per-view was kind of built on for the NWA title, where Cody, the American Nightmare, won the title from Nick Aldis, the title that his dad was always chasing and would always get screwed out of. This had the most wrestling history in it. It had a satisfying ending for me. What did you think about the way that they built this match on the show?
So I really enjoyed this match. I thought this match was probably my second favorite match on the card. My favorite part about it was just the ceremony of it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It felt
absolutely.
Yeah, it felt like a very traditional, like old school wrestling title fight.
This felt different than WWE the way
very,
they did this.
Yes, very. Both wrestlers came down with their, you know, like their training camp people with them. Cody had like Tommy Dreamer and Diamond Dallas Page with him, and somebody else. I think it was
Brandy's dad.
Brandy's dad. Glacier. That's who it was. Yes, yes. And Glacier.
The WCW wrestler Glacier.
Yeah. Glacier. And then like Aldis came down with Tim Storm and some of the other NWA guys.
Sean Daivari.
Sean Daivari. Oh my God.
And Jeff Jarrett.
Double J. I forgot about Double J.
Double J was there, and he was wearing, go back and spot this, he was wearing this cool lapel pin that was the NWA title like belt plate.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool, and I want one. Billy Corgan, if you're listening, I want one of those.
I really loved the pomp and circumstance about it, and my favorite part of the match was the beginning. It had that huge, when like the bell rang and like the audience came alive and they were cheering just for the beginning of the match. Like those some of my favorite moments in wrestling is where the audience is so into it that they are going nuts before they even touch. Like I love that feel. It gives such an amazing feel to the match.
I agree. The match itself was a slower paced, but I think that's fine. I think that's who those wrestlers are. There was a great spot with a diamond cutter and also a blade job.
You got a blade job, yeah.
Blade job. And it, you know, it ended great. Brandy was awesome in the match. So the outcome of it, though, is that Cody is now the NWA champion.
Yes.
The NWA champion has to go around to different, very small promotions. I really like want to emphasize how small a lot of the NWA promotions are. And historically, the NWA champion tours around to all of those and fights those promotions' champions. And that is what Nick Aldis has been doing with Billy Corgan. It's tough to think that Cody's going to have as much time to do that as Nick Aldis did.
Well, especially because Cody is a signed Ring of Honor wrestler. So,
yep.
Granted, he's not on TV every week or things like that, but I mean, he has obligations with Ring of Honor, with any of their New Japan collaborations they're doing. So, I mean,
where does the title go from here?
I think this is Billy Corgan's way of integrating the NWA into this like unspoken alliance of Impact and Ring of Honor and New Japan, where this is his way. Cause like we can now, for all we know, we could see Cody defend the NWA title at Wrestle Kingdom next year. Like it's a brilliant move.
I'm sure they would love to have it.
Absolutely.
It's the oldest world title belt in wrestling. And there's been periods where it didn't mean much, but for a majority of wrestling history, this was the world title.
Yeah.
And I think if they can turn it into the major world title of the indies again, that would be fantastic. But I don't know
that
how
would
receptive
be cool.
Like Ring of Honor will be to it, because it devalues, like, unintentionally
exactly,
devalues
yeah.
everyone.
That's
else's
what I was
title.
Gonna say. I like that idea of it like becoming this unspoken like ultimate prize of the indies, but I don't think that's going to happen, specifically just with the weight that the IWGP heavyweight title has been given just in the last 2-3 years, from Okada's historical run to Omega now having it. And then Ring of Honor, of course, you're absolutely right. They don't want to devalue their world title by having this other world, more like, you know, renowned title on their pay-per-views devaluing their own. So I think there's got to be a way that they can still showcase the NWA title on their program to get the advertising rub, of course, and like the eyes on their product, without holding it on a pedestal above their own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if that's just like making a rule that it can't be in the main event, but could be like the second main event of shows. Yeah. Or, I mean, I wonder if this means Cody will be on the 10 Pounds of Gold web series now, which is similar to being the Elite, but is like all about
I recently just watched the All In episode of the 10 Pounds of Gold, and it, I mean, it's, they
talk about a weighty title.
Yeah, I mean,
it's 10 pounds.
They cover the whole All In match, so I mean, he's featured extremely prominently, and I figure he's definitely going to be going forward, being that he's now the title holder. But
here's the question, though. Late breaking news. And this kind of puts a damper, potentially, on this all. The next title defense he's going to have, Cody, of the NWA title, is going to be at the NWA's 70th anniversary show, and it's going to be a rematch against Nick Aldis. And this is going to be in... This will be on October 21st.
Okay.
So, you know the question I'm going to ask. Yeah. Are they just going to flip the title back?
I didn't know that Aldis was getting a rematch. So, I think they're going to give it back to Aldis, because then that solves all these complications that we were talking about. And it's very easy to give someone a title for a month or two and then not have to deal with any complications. So, yeah, I think Aldis is getting it back now that you say that.
That's too bad. I hope that it's just them anticipating what we think is going to happen, and maybe they can swerve it around.
Yeah.
We'll see, though. It certainly has made Nick Aldis's career over again. It's going to keep elevating Cody, because the idea of a Rhodes with an NWA title is going to bring a lot of old-timers back into watching.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So the question is, looking at the rest of the card, who else's careers were made on this show? Who had a low profile going into this that now is going to be making more money on their bookings?
I think a lot of people, honestly, this show did a whole lot for a lot of people, and including not just people who like weren't well known, including people who were well known. I think Hangman Page coming out of this pay-per-view is on another level now. Like he's been in the Being the Elite series since the beginning, almost. Like he's always had notoriety with the Elite, but after this pay-per-view, like I think he's definitely stepped up to that next level. I could see Hangman Page being Ring of Honor World Champion very soon.
I think that's a really good idea. I think he has to have a match with Joey Ryan before that happens.
Yes.
Like that has to be a big payoff match after the ridiculous angle where there was a lot of penis driven storyline stuff going on. We won't get too blue on this, but that was the most ridiculous part of the show, where Hangman Page was taken out of the ring by a bunch of walking penises.
And like we could explain it further why that happened, but you just do your own research and
just
you'll
Google
figure it out.
But be very careful with your
very
Googling
careful what
for
you
it.
Google, yeah. But no, I have to mention the besides Hangman, the person who I think All In did the most for is definitely Flip Gordon.
Yeah.
I think Flip Gordon, he's been on Being the Elite. He has that elite rub already, but I think this pay-per-view and like the cheer that he got from the crowd when like winning the Battle Royal and then going on to face Jay Lethal, if they weren't already looking at him, I guarantee you he's at the top of the list to be recruited for 205 mm-hmm. Live. I guarantee that.
Yeah, he also, like, you could sell him so great because he is a former U.S. Army Reserve.
Oh, yeah. Member. And WWE loves that.
You could throw him and Mustafa Ali together as, like, the servicemen of 205 Live, and that they would be amazing.
Yeah.
Two other people I want to point out who I think mm-hmm. really got made on this show. One is the villain Marty Scurll.
Oh, yes.
He already is a big star, but he does want to transition to being a heavyweight, not a junior heavyweight. And mm-hmm. I think that the match he had with Okada was the best technical wrestling match on the show, in my opinion. I know some people like Jim Ross were upset that it went long, but I think actually that was the idea.
So here's my thing. I got to stand up for my boy Marty here. Because this has been one of the bigger stories coming out of All In going lately is that everyone keeps saying like, oh yeah, the Skrull Okada match was the one that went long. It went like 14, 15 minutes over, which is why the main event had to be cut. But mm-hmm. I have to stick up for my boy Marty here because he has said it himself. He's like, we didn't go over. He's like, we went over like maybe a minute at most. And he said that it was maybe other matches or segments beforehand, but he said they only went over 1 minute. And right before his match, when he went out there, Matt or Nick, one of the Bucks, like came to him and they said like, hey, we're over on time, but don't cut a single thing from your match. So the Bucks were aware of the time that match was going to take. And Marty says they didn't go over like, but a minute. So I have to believe that.
Yeah. I thought he was made. I mean, all four of the women in the women's match were really good,
mm-hmm.
but particularly, holy cow, Tessa Blanchard looks like
a star,
a murderer.
Man. She's a star.
She is wonderful, and she was in there with like people who have much more interesting characters than her, mm-hmm. I would argue. But she is as vicious as I wish Charlotte Flair was in her matches. You know,
that'd be a great
she's
match,
just as
man.
Physically imposing. Yeah, I mean, book it, WWE. I mean, you already had her in the Mae Young Classic and didn't sign her for some reason.
Foolish.
Which I think there's it's only, you know.
Oh, it's only a matter of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I kind of want to just roll through the matches really quickly. And if you want to give me like a thing of note that happened in some of these matches, things to go back and rewatch. In the Matt Cross MJF match, I had never seen MJF. Had you?
I've never seen him. I watched. Cody has a YouTube channel as well where he had been putting out advertising like videos for All In the weeks leading up to it,
mm-hmm.
and they had one specifically where they highlighted MJF for like they gave him like a good 6-7 minutes on this like episode to like kind of explain who he was. So I remember that episode, and then when he came out, I was like, oh yeah, this guy. But yeah, he was great. I thought he was really enjoyable. He's got a great gimmick,
heel.
Yeah, it's not so much that like it's an over the top gimmick, but it's just enough where you're like, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, it was realistic, and he had great trunks too.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you impressed by Stephen Amell against Christopher Daniels?
I was, man. I'll be honest, I've never seen an episode of Arrow, so I know he's an actor. I'm sure mm-hmm. he's a great actor, because Arrow's on its like 7th or 8th season or something like that.
Yeah, that was the most shocking thing in the commentary when they were like, Arrow coming back for its 7th season. Yeah. Like, wow, that was fast.
So I'm sure he's a great actor, but I mean, he did a fairly good job in that ring. It's easy to see when someone who is not a professional wrestler all the time try professional wrestling, and not in terms of like he didn't wrestle well. He did a lot of things very well in that ring.
Yeah,
but it's
it was
it's
the
like,
movements.
Yeah, little nuances that you realize, like the footwork and the way he moves around the ring, and like the way that he sells things. You can, it's little things like that. But I really thought he did great for, because this was his first singles match, I believe.
Yes. So he couldn't hide anywhere, but he had, exactly, you know, one of the most consummate pros in Christopher Daniels,
oh,
who's been
God,
wrestling for 25 years in there with him. And he had Jerry Lynn as the
Jerry Lynn,
the referee. What did you think about that?
I popped for it, man. When I saw Jerry Lynn was the referee, I was like, oh, that was awesome.
I could tell he was a new referee because the one mistake he made was he got right in the camera shot for the coast to coast move.
Oh,
and
yeah,
just like covered it up. But other than that, Jerry's going to be great.
Yeah.
We already talked about the women's four corners. I love Chelsea Green's gimmick. I just want to put that
out
there.
Great,
she's
man.
Like the Two-Face of wrestling, like the Batman
the hot
character.
Mess, man.
Yeah, Hot Mess is a great character.
Yeah,
we
great.
Talked about Cody versus Nick. We talked about a little bit about Hangman Page beating Joey Janela. What was your favorite spot in that match?
Probably my favorite spot was honestly, it's my favorite part of the match was Penelope Ford. I thought she was amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she was Janela's manager ringside, and because it was a street fight, there's no disqualification. So she got in the ring at some point and like started fighting back against Hangman Page, and she did these amazing like backward I know there's a gymnastics term for it, but like backward like tumbling like away from him and then hit him with a stunner. Like it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah.
I will say, as you know, if you listen to our show, that we know Hangman Page personally.
Yes.
And I was watching this match in bed with my significant other, with Chelsea, and she was kind of watching like out of the corner of her eye as I was watching this, and she leaned over right during the Penelope Ford stuff and was like, oh man, did he just hit that woman? And I was like, yep. moving on. Jay Lethal defending the Ring of Honor World Championship against Flip Gordon. Speaking of about Randy Savage.
Yes.
Everything that we're going to talk about with his relationship with Miss Elizabeth in the next section of this episode, they referenced in this match. Jay Lethal is like the Frank Caliendo of wrestling, and that he does really good impressions of older wrestlers. Ric Flair is his best, but Black Machismo, his version of Randy Savage, is right up there.
Yes, very
good. What was your favorite Randy Savage thing he did in
my
the match?
Favorite,
he got
my
hit on the back and
thing.
Turned into Randy Savage.
My favorite thing was him pulling Brandi Rhodes to his corner. Brandi Rhodes out there in Flip Gordon's corner, his opponent's corner, and right before the match starts, Jay Lethal gets out of the ring, walks over, grabs Brandi by the hand, and pulls her around the ring to his corner. And you can hear him saying, he's like, you know, Elizabeth, you stand here. Like, it was so good, because I also remembered like vividly Macho Man doing that exact thing, like pulling Elizabeth around the ring, like in holding her hand. Like, it was, oh man, that was probably my favorite Macho Man spot that he did.
Yeah, I liked that he went back and forth between being Macho Man and Jay Lethal a few times in the match, because you got to see how good that impression is just in like a physical way too, because you could just be dropped in and be like, well, he's being Jay Lethal right now. I can tell by the way he runs versus how he is as the Macho Man. Kenny Omega versus Pentagon. What did you think?
Honestly, so I haven't really watched a lot of Lucha Underground. And I don't really watch Impact now. So, but I'm like, I'm aware of everything. So I know who Pentagon is. I've heard about him.
He might be going to WWE.
Have seen one or two of his matches. But like, damn, that was a really good match. It felt different than like a normal Kenny Omega match, because it was intended to. It was supposed to be, you know, a different style of wrestler that Kenny wasn't used to. Like, and it certainly felt that way. I did enjoy it. It was a great match.
Yeah, I love that arm breaker thing that he has is really brutal and looks great. What do you think about Chris Jericho's surprise after this match?
I thought it was super entertaining. Definitely surprising. My thing right now is I'm kind of getting not sick of, but I'm just getting like a little annoyed with Jericho's gimmick of he's the guy who shows up in a costume and attacks people. Like, cause like he did it, that New Japan pay-per-view where he dressed up as Bushi and attacked Naito. And like, I'm just getting kind of annoyed with it, but it was good.
He's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. It was a great wrestling spot.
It definitely was the most difficult this time. If you listen to Jericho's podcast, he talked about the lengths he had to go to pull this off because Pentagon forgot to bring two versions of his outfit.
Oh my God. So he just, oh wait. So he had to put on the same outfit?
No. Like, cause they definitely like Pentagon is in the ring and the lights go out for an extended period of time. And in that time behind the scenes, Pentagon rolls out and rolls under the ring, and Chris Jericho rolls into the ring, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is that Pentagon brought two outfits, deciding which one he was going to wear, but he forgot to bring a double of them for Jericho. So he was wearing a black and gold outfit during the match. He brought another one that was like a white and silver outfit. And Jericho frantically before the show, like, he also had to fly in for this because he had a concert that night. He had to go get gold and black spray paint and spray paint the other costumes. And if you look at it now, you can look at it and be like, yep, that's a spray painted costume. But it worked for like the 10 seconds in the show to really confuse people. What's your favorite spot from the main event,
from the tag match?
Because we talked about Okada and Skrull as well.
I mean, they were in such quick succession.
They all kind of ran together.
They all kind of ran together a lot. So this was also the first time I had seen Rey Fénix wrestling, who is Pentagon's like legit brother. But he, I've heard like a tale like, oh, he's incredible in the ring. You have to see the things he can do. The rope walking spot that he did that everyone keeps talking about, where like he started on the turnbuckle and like tight roped walk across more than halfway of the ring and then like kicked either Nick or Kota, whoever was on there, off. But he had to hop around too. It was incredible.
That was super impressive to me. So that was All In. Go back and watch it if you haven't already. Or if you're a fan of John Mayer, go back and watch
it. Yeah, John Mayer was there.
John Mayer was the one person they cut to in the audience who was like a celebrity.
Macaulay Culkin was also there. I don't think they ever cut to him. But
no, they didn't. And David Arquette was there as well, I believe. Oh, wow. But John Mayer is who they picked, and they kept referencing it all night, which I found really fun.
There you go.
So All In is in the books. What does All In 2 look like? Where does it happen? When does it happen? And can it be successful?
So nothing has been announced yet. I think it's going to happen. I think it will. In which case, it's either going to be... Because they said, more or less, Cody has said that they want to double it. They want to try and do 20,000 people. And the thing about that is now you have to find not only a city that has a good wrestling like demographic, but you also have to find a city that has an arena that can seat 20,000 people. And that having those two constrictions like kind of limits where you can go. And so I think the best honestly, I think the best place would be Madison Square Garden. I think if anything, they can be like, hey, that New Japan ROH show without us even advertised for the card sold out in like 10 minutes. So why can't we sell out All In 2 there? So I think that would be the best place for it.
Yeah, I think that or doing it international, doing like somewhere in Canada. Or doing the UK, I think would make sense. But we'll see. Do you think it could still draw now that the novelty of it being the first time this has happened in a while is gone? What will it take to really like keep those people?
If it's still got the Bucks and Cody and Omega and that crew, yeah, I think it can. I think it can sell out and still work.
Well, that raises a great question. Yeah.
Well, I think my difference is the first time around, I think it sold out because of the novelty of it, of like, this is the first time this could happen. Like, we just want it to happen. They didn't advertise a single match before tickets went on sale. Like, it sold out without them advertising anything. And so I feel like for All In 2, they would at least need to give us a card. Like,
yeah, there's got to be a big match to build
give us around. Give us a big match as a reason to come. And like, whether it's, you know, Omega versus Ibushi or something like that. Yeah, I feel like they're going to have to give us a little more info the second time around.
Here's the other thing that begs the question, is the Bucks, Cody, and Omega all have their contracts coming up right after the new year. There's been rumor that there's a pact between those four individuals, plus Hangman Page and Marty, that they, whatever they're going to do, they're going to do it together.
Yes.
So do you think, one, do you think that WWE would take all of them in one fell swoop? And can All In 2 or Ring of Honor specifically survive if that happens? Because New Japan will be fine if that they won't be fine, but
they won't be fine, they will
continue,
but like,
to have all the Japanese stars. Exactly. If that were to happen.
Okay, so the short answer, if, and honestly, if and when WWE signs them, All In will not succeed without them. I think without them, it's just another indie show. Ring of Honor, I don't think it's going to die by any means, but I don't think it's going to continue to get the buzz that it is currently getting. And in terms of WWE signing the group of them, I think WWE definitely would prefer get like individuals. Like, we would prefer to just sign Omega or just sign the Bucks or something like that.
Yeah.
But if they have to sign all of them at once, I feel like it would, A, they'd have to really back up the Brinks truck for that one, because good Lord. But I mean,
they would get the Bullet Club license maybe with that, or they wouldn't.
I don't think New Japan would have it. I don't think New Japan would give them. Also, but no, here's the main thing. I don't think WWE wants the Bullet Club license, because
it's got bullets.
Those shirts sell, but literally that's it. Just the bullet phrase in it. But honestly, I feel like if WWE, for some reason, like, were like, yes, we want all of you, we want you as a group, I feel like it would have to be at a time when they are wrapping up, like, whatever the main storyline is on Raw. Like, it would have to be, like, a post-Mania thing where, like, at Mania they had a Shield triple threat. And then after that, they're like, all right, cool, well, that big ass storyline has been wrapped up. What do we do now? Oh, cool. Let's introduce the whole being the Elite Squad. And now we have a whole new story, because if and when they debut as a group, like, whatever storylines you had going, you could throw those out the window, because they don't matter now.
Yeah. Then it becomes an all out faction war. You have to have another faction, I feel like, for them to go up against. Yeah.
Undisputed Era.
Well, that's the thing, is you got another Bullet Club member in the Undisputed Era. Yeah. You got four more on the roster beyond that. Mm-hmm. So you would have so many people who have ties to it suddenly on the roster that.
Yeah. It could be interesting, but I don't know. I mean, do you really think that WWE would sign the group of them? Because also think if the list of demands that they would have coming in. They know they're the biggest, like, free agents in the last 20 years. Like, I feel like they're going in, like, they're going to want some things.
I think that they could potentially sign all of them at once, but it'd be like, okay, Paige is going to NXT, and Marty's going to do a quick run at 205 Live, and Omega's going to be a single star, and the Bucks will be...
Bucks are going to SmackDown.
Like, their own thing. Like, I don't think that they would keep them all together, if that makes... Like, they would bring them all in at the same time,
but
pun intended.
Them.
But, yeah. Yeah, because that's a lot of people to debut together and throw into a story. We will see, though. That was a very thorough review of All In.
Maybe we'll just split it, make two episodes.
I might do that, but we're going into...
And that's exactly what we did. We will see you all on Monday for our next episode where we talk about weddings and have the return of the K-Fabe 5000. You can reach us with your questions and concerns and requests at muchadowrestling@gmail.com or on our Facebook group, which is Much Ado About Wrestling, or on Twitter at Ado Wrestling, or you can check out our website, muchadowrestling.com, for more blogs like the one going up tomorrow about how to bet on this weekend's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Yes, you got that right. They do allow betting on professional wrestling. Until then, we leave you with the immortal words of William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.